Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
Welcome back to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where we're shooting the shit with elected officials and candidates running for office to get to know the person beyond the politics.
Because politicians needed a rebrand. I have no idea what to talk about.
You're just literally in a swing state yet again. What do you mean you have nothing to talk about? You're out here convincing voters to vote, not just vote, actually, to vote for Kamala Harris and the Dems. Am I correct in that synopsis?
You're correct. You're correct. I'm sorry. My brain just fried. I'm on a swing state tour.
She just forgot she's doing all this important work out here.
We hit Milwaukee. Last weekend was Arizona. We went to Phoenix. And a lot of say yes to Prop 139, which, you know, we talked about on this show such a long time ago. I think when they were gathering signatures, right?
No, literally. It was, you know, I cannot.
And I saw the guest who came on.
Wait,
we went
stop.
To the canvassing kickoff to go door knock.
Okay. So for those that don't know, because we've got Arizona listeners, hello, what is this proposition? Can you give what's the theme?
Sure. The theme is that it is a vote yes for abortion access to protect abortion rights in the state constitution in Arizona. So no matter if, you know, the state legislature comes in with a super conservative majority, it is enshrined in the state constitution. So abortion rights will be protected via direct democracy. So if you are an Arizona voter, tell all your friends that you can go vote yes on Prop 139 and protect abortion rights, which is exciting. And I will caveat that too, though, with voting for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz is also a crucial part of this, because even if Prop 139 and other ballot measures across the country get enshrined in these state constitutions, if Donald Trump wins and instates a federal abortion ban, then it's kind of null and void at that point. So it's an important fight in these states where we have abortion ballot measures, but it's also an important fight on the federal level. So we have to keep pushing for that too.
No, it's so true. Because then even it's a back and forth of that, right? They're yin and yang. Because say, for example, and all toes, noses, and fingers crossed for Kamala Harris to obviously win. But if that happens, the road to getting Roe codified at the federal level, it's not an easy, let's just sign a document, get rid of the filibuster. There's things that need to happen as a very government, mechanism end of things. So in the meantime of trying to get that to happen, trying to get all the ducks in a row with hopefully a trifecta, right? We're fingers crossing yet again with a trifecta for us to do that. We also need to make sure that people in each of these states are protected to the furthest extent that they are able to. So that's that. The question really is, who is the hot man in your vid on your story? Hunky man, hunky brown flow man, not the one in Milwaukee.
Wait, hold on. First of all, who's the one in Milwaukee? Second of all, video. I don't remember a video, but
Maybe it was a video story.
Mustache boy.
Mustache boy. Ironic mustache boy.
So it's funny, when we were prepping for this trip, he popped onto the Zoom and I was like, oh my God, that is one of the hotter, that man is my type. That was one of the hotter men I've ever seen. And the intros go around and he is hilarious. And he was like, I'm Nick, I'm a homosexual, just immediately. And I was like, that checks.
Great.
But honestly, one of my favorite people of all time, such a cutie.
We love to see it. We love an ironic mustache. And honestly, We love a little bit of fun and sass going on. The Milwaukee man was the guy that was very drunk at your event that had very long hair that I was very curious about his hair routine about. So, you know, I didn't, because I've been thinking about his luscious locks for the last however long.
I don't know if I can say luscious.
Okay, were they dry in person?
Yes, so dry. I was going to say a little crispy.
Ooh, we hate to see it. We really hate to see it. I just got a new like vitamin mix of things of like collagen, biotin, like whatever, which I'm just gonna see. I'm like gonna see what that does. We're gonna like test it out.
Nice.
But it smells bad.
Oh.
Nobody warned me.
Like what?
Like it smells like almost like soury smell. Yeah, I wasn't, I'm not like, ooh, yum.
Well, I'm sure your hair is thanking you, but.
Yeah, it actually called me out the other day. It was like, hey, congrats. Thanks.
Good. Good. That's what I figured.
Yeah. Yeah. But we also have to talk about something that was cracking me up, but is just so horrible. And that is Trump stranding a whole lot of his supporters in the middle of Coachella Valley. In the middle of the desert. Can we just?
Yeah. Yeah. There's that. And there's also the like playing weird ass music for 30 minutes straight thing that I like am like, that is bizarre. Like, what is going on? I actually don't know all the context of the Coachella thing. Like, I've just seen like memes of it, but I don't like know all the details. So feel free to spill.
Okay, so basically, and this is of like what I know to this point. Maybe there's more that's like happened since I last checked in on the story this morning. However, the gist is he had a rally in Coachella Valley. First of all, it was like over 100 degrees, okay? So just like not, you know, like not intelligent to do regardless, because no one should be like hosting something like that where obviously people are going to have medical emergencies left and right because they're overheated and dehydrated. Obviously, or not so obviously, it was also like what, like a 7-hour wait to get into the rally. Then they do the rally. Then after, there are no buses to take these people back to their cars. Supposedly and allegedly, the bus drivers weren't paid for like the second leg or something, like aka the return. So they were like, see ya. And
classic
therefore,
Trump
all
business.
These people, no, literally, all of these people were climbing over the walls trying to like, ironic. So ironic. Holy shit.
Yeah, that visual is key.
No, and there's some TikToks going around that, like, now the more I think about it, the funnier it gets. Well, it's fucked up, but funny. It's one of those, you know? And anyways, they are, you know, climbing over their walls, had to walk 2 hours in the dark to their cars in the desert at night.
Wow.
And the comment section?
That's insane.
Are literally, like I'm dying at, like, because the videos have made it to liberal side of TikTok, aka our side of TikTok. And it literally, comments are like, thoughts and concepts of plans, like prayers, and like it is fucking,
or it's just like
day.
Also, my comment would be like, LOL, I'm sure they're still obsessed with him and think he can do no wrong. Like, you know,
that's
like it's
thing.
Just that's the scary part, is that they're probably like still gonna vote for him, even though it's just like such an embodiment of who he is. Like that's literally Fyre Festival. And like he is like Trump is the Fyre Festival guy, and the Fyre Festival guy is Trump, and like it's is just the fraudster element of it all is in full force here. Also, I've seen just like interesting commentary as well on like why is he rallying in California, New York, and Colorado? And it's just, that's also an interesting piece of it all. And it's like, are you just being dumb? Is there a sneaky strategy here? Or what my theory is that like his rallies have been so pathetic in swing states and haven't been turning people out. And he's going to places where he's not regularly, and maybe people aren't so burnt out and who never get the chance to see him. And so that like people will go and there'll be crowds and he can get a little like ego boost. That's my theory behind it.
Interesting. So our friend V put up a theory on that. And I actually really agree with V's theory. And it's like a trying to set up like a defense. How do I even phrase this? V phrases so well. Holy shit. Hold on. Essentially, I'm going to go to all of these like blue places that I know I'm going to lose after showing I have these massive crowds in these blue areas, and then feel like I have the visual or the argument to say when he, you know, loses these places. What, they stole the election? Do you see the size of my crowds in these blue places? There's no way I could have lost. Like, here's the proof. And I think that is a really, really interesting take. I definitely think there's some credence to it. We are continuing to see that they're trying to dismantle this election system in their favor, which is hilarious because that's what they always accuse the Dems of. Meanwhile, they always just accuse us of doing exactly what they're doing to deflect, which is wild. Yeah. And I just feel like we are living in an era where a entire political party is embodying the behavior of a fuckboy.
Yeah, and has been for the past, you know, almost 10 years now. So,
but like one with an STD.
Yeah, like the worst, not even a fuckboy. Like that's an injustice to fuckboys, to be honest.
You know what?
Like,
justice for fuckboys. Sometimes, like, okay.
You know, it's like,
when did this become such a
myth? Fuckboys at least are like hot and like funny and charming,
so
you know?
True.
They're doing the narrative work to like try and plant seeds of doubt. We'll see what else they come up with, but. Yeah, it's pretty crazy being in a swing state. I feel for everyone involved. I think we're all burnt out across the country, but good Lord, I can only imagine. Not only are you getting bombarded with ads and texts and calls, but your door's getting knocked, you know, every day, every weekend, and your dog's barking and you're just like, God damn it. Go away.
You know what?
Go away.
This is
so what we say to that is go vote. Go early vote. Get it out of the way. Get off systems. Get off lists. Go vote.
So true. So true. I am glad that I don't live in a swing state, albeit me loving attention. But because I literally think if someone knocks on my door, I am crawling on the floor, rolling under a bed and hiding in a corner, probably
I'm
with
climbing
a bat.
Down my fire escape. Literally, like, who is this? I actually was door knocked like a few weeks ago by like a local campaign. I was like, how the fuck did you get in here? I'm like,
like,
it's weird when they door knock apartment buildings. I'm like, what?
Yeah, no, it definitely like gives a little like, what the fuck? Like, did you get the code? Who gave you the code? Like,
who gave you the code?
Literally.
Or do you just wait outside for someone to leave and then sneak on in? Like, what is that?
It's just, it's a different beast for sure. Any other takeaways from like either swing state or are you going to another one? Or is that
I'm going to one every weekend until.
Wait, okay,
going
so
to Atlanta.
Next?
Atlanta
okay,
next weekend, this coming weekend. And then the weekend after that, we're doing like a college weekend. So it'll be, I'll be in Madison, Wisconsin. Go Badgers.
Oh my God, imagine.
Makes me think of Hannah Burner.
No, literally. Wait.
No, I know. Actually, we should try and get her to come.
I was just going
to
say.
Okay, I'm going to think about that.
Interesting that I feel like, obviously, Sierra has done some political stuff, aka been a surrogate for the Harris campaign, which we love to see. And I'm just like even more obsessed with her than I already was. Like it just like overflow, you know what I mean?
And I saw that the like White House girlies went backstage at the Giggly Squad tour.
I know.
Did you see that? Like Ariana and Avery and everyone. Mm-hmm. I was like, maybe they got in. Both Paige too. I mean, that would be iconic if Paige did something.
I mean, she was at that White House that they did invite her back. What was that? Spring?
Yeah.
So not to say that she wouldn't, you know? I'm so curious. Ugh, we need to ask them. I want to be like, how did it go?
Yeah.
Like, are you guys best friends now? Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
We need the tea on that one.
I know. I was definitely jealous about that. Well, who is our guest today?
Okay. Our guest is none other than Adam Frisch. Now, you guys may recall this name because he's run for Congress before, This is his second time running. And he is running in a district. Currently, the seat is held by Lauren Boebert. But Boebert? I can't say your last name.
Who cares?
There it is. Anyways, long story short, she's running in another district, but she currently holds the seat and he almost beat her last time around, like really, really close. And he said, I'm running again. Sorry. And it's still a really important race and house seat for us to flip. So this is an important conversation to get the 4-on-1. Talking rural districts, which we got to talk about. Remember that I called us coastal elite bitches in this episode, and I just like to apologize to the.
Did she lie? Did she lie?
Look, I didn't, but like, you know me. Every once in a while, the words come out of my mouth before like the brain can stop it.
The brain
like,
agrees. Yes, the brain signs off. Yeah.
It wasn't even like good. Like sometimes I say something absolutely with like so much audacity that's funny. Like I just sound like a tool.
Yeah. No, I think it's funny. Well, everyone sign off in the comments whether it's funny or cringy. I think it's funny.
And then Maddie's going to read the comments because we know I don't read the comments.
Yeah, I'll make sure to poll for the answer.
Yeah, it's going to be a real tight race there. But nonetheless, without further ado, here is Adam Frisch. All right. Welcome to Girl in the Gov, the podcast. This is an exciting conversation to be had. Guys, we have Adam Frisch on, who is running for Congress in Colorado. And of course, you know, as we go about this conversation, there's so many questions to have, so many holes to fill and all those things. But we always have to start with something, you know, overwhelmingly, you know, classic, which is, how did you get in this race? We know you've run before, but what was the, you know, the entrance point for you here?
Yeah, no, good morning, everybody, and great to be on here. And thank you for what you're doing. It's really important to make sure there's a diversity of thoughts out there from all sorts of angles. And I really appreciate that there's some conversations happening that's not part of the angertainment aspect of politics. And I think you guys do a good job in sincere conversations. So that's helpful. Hey, listen, I was a city council person in my hometown for a while where I live. My wife was on the school board. That's elected community service. The plan was never to run for Congress. There were just some comments made in the summer and fall of 2021 by our representative. For those that don't know, it's this woman, Lauren Boebert, that kind of exemplifies that angertainment aspect to politics that so many of us, regardless of partisanship, do not want to see. And we just started talking with my very politically astute son at the time, 16 years old, and his mom and my wife, Katie, and a little bit with our daughter as well, Quintessa, just about, you know, sometimes it's important to stand up. And I've always kind of stood up for my community, no matter where I am. This is just on a higher level, of course. And we had a lot of skepticism as we started to look at it, as I started to call people. Real quick, our district is larger than the state of Pennsylvania. It is 50% of the state of Colorado. If you can, for your listeners, it's the western third of Colorado and basically the bottom third or quarter. And while we have Aspen and Telluride and Crested Butte, we have 250,000 person communities in Pueblo and Grand Junction, 5 hours apart. Pueblo's blue collar, proudly still working class. Grand Junction is kind of the epicenter of the western slope, which has traditionally been extraction, oil and gas, and ranching and farming. It's diversified its economic and environmental portfolio. There's a lot of other things going on, but we have a few of the wealthiest counties in the country, and we have some of the least well-off. We have counties, we have 27 of them. We have counties that are 90% Democrat and counties that are 90% Republican. So I'm like, well, we're going to run a pro-normal party coalition, and we're going to work really, really hard. And I've been on the road almost 70,000 miles in the past 2.5 years. And I'm on the road about 20 to 25 days a month. The upside of that is we live in the most beautiful district in the entire country. And most of those miles have been with my son, Felix, who did his junior year of high school online so we could drive together. And he worked in the campaign, and he's back in the road after graduating from high school, and he's deferring college for a year to work on our campaign. And so we've done I feel like I've done like a 70,000 mile father-son national focus group.
I love that. That's so sweet. And I'm curious, too. I love what you said. Normal party?
Normal coalition.
What does that look like? Yeah. What does that look like to you? And how do you communicate that to voters?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things. Part of it is, you know, a good chunk of it is just who I am. I think, you know, I like people playing between the 245-yard lines. I think if we want to talk about a non-football analogy, just like this pro-normal party, I believe the vast majority of people are somewhere, are common sense, moderate. They're not political animals, right? The most people are trying to figure out how to keep their head above water economically, economic opportunity. If they're having kids, that they want to have them in a safe, good school. They want to make sure that there's effort. And especially in Western Colorado, Southern Colorado, the vast majority of our communities are pretty small, 1,000-person counties, 300-person towns, 5,000-person towns. And we just kind of want to figure out how to get along and not have a lot of national yelling and screaming going on. And so that's where I am, and that's where our district is. And then from a political standpoint, Maddie, the district makeup is 22% registered Democrat and 32% registered Republican. and 45% registered independent or unaffiliated, as we say in Colorado, which I was for 20 years, right? And so to me, it's very easy to focus on what is what I would argue politically astute, but much more importantly, sincerely, authentically, of what the district is and where I am. And over the last 40 or 50 years, a district has gone back before between common sense Republicans and common sense Democrats. It's been mostly Republican over the past 10 or 15 years, as basically the entire country has kind of shifted towards urban Democrats and rural Republicans. And I'm trying to kind of break through the monopolization that we see in kind of those two simplistic but fairly relevant buckets of that conversation. I just think it's better. You know, I don't like monopolies in business and I don't like monopolies in politics. And so we're just trying to talk like normal people to normal people, and we're building coalitions, and it's great.
For sure. And look, you know what they say, there's nothing common about common sense. We got to make it a little bit more common, bring it into the purview of everyone and the everyday. And I'm curious, as you're chatting with voters, you're chatting with people around the district, what are those issues that people are most worried about? What is keeping them up at night?
Listen, the majority, I talk to a lot of Democrats, are frustrated with the Democratic Party in D.C. I talk to Republicans, they're frustrated with the Republican Party in D.C. I talk to independents, and they're frustrated with everyone in D.C., right? And so this has never been about Team Republican or Team Democrat. This is about Team Colorado's 3rd District and focusing on what they're focusing on from an issue standpoint. Water is really important for some of your viewers. You might, whether you live in the Midwest or out East, you might have too much. There has been a 30-year drought in the western part of the United States, and Colorado is the headwater, if you will, for 40 million people that rely on Colorado mountain water that goes to New Mexico and Utah and Wyoming and Nevada and California and Arizona. And they want to make sure that water stays in western and southern Colorado, not only leaving the state, but they also don't want to see it go up to Denver, because it's really important for ag, ranching, farming, biodiversity, conservation, and tourism and recreation that that water stays where it's supposed to be. There's a conversation about, obviously, cost of living is at the top of everyone's mind, without a doubt. There's this assumption, I think, from people that live in big cities that things are just easier and cheaper in rural parts of the country, and that's just not the case. In a lot of places, there's very limited choice, whether it's grocery stores or doctors. A lot of people are driving an hour or 2 hours to see an OBGYN for pregnancy care or reproductive right health care. And a lot of us have more in common with rural Tennessee than we do with downtown Denver. And there's just kind of this rural way of life that just feels like it's not really appreciated or understood, even by people in our Denver state capital. And so there's some common themes there that we focus on. It's a lot less issues about some of these social issues that get a lot of the national attention. Of course, we have to secure a border and do it in a humane way and cost of living. But people are not getting into these gender debates or what the gender is of a textbook in a schoolroom. That's just not part of. Most people are really trying to focus on how to keep their head above water economically and live in safe communities, which most people want to do and do. But there are some places that we still try to see some kind of small crime, town crime, that we have to make sure that we support our local safety officers.
Lauren Boebert, I feel like, really does focus on a lot of those kind of like national hot topic, the angry politics you mentioned issues.
Yeah.
And you've run before against her, right? And like it came incredibly close. And I feel like you are speaking to the people in your district. You're kind of putting the politics aside and talking about issues that they care about. And so I'm just curious, like, is that resonating this time around? What is that double touch point of like talking to these voters again and being like, by the way, I'm back. How has that been going? And how has it been different this time?
Yeah. So thanks, Maddie. There were two things that we focused on when we started running. One was to push back against one of the leaders of this angertainment political industry. Two was I wanted to stand up for more people in the rural parts of Colorado and the rural parts of our country. Now, for those that aren't aware, we started off our campaign against Lauren Boebert in February of 23. In those 8 months, we did so well. She literally, for the first time in 20 years, a sitting congressperson bailed on their district, not due to redistricting, and has left. So she's gone. And so there's a little bit of a moral victory there. But having said that, when people ask me, not you're running against a different person, what's changed? I mean, you know, my values haven't changed about how important it is to build coalitions and focus on a pro-normal, rule-focused policies and not politics. The work ethic hasn't changed. We continue to drive we're on the road for 10 days. We go home for a day. I'm on the road for another 10 days. I go home for a day. And that's how we've been doing it no matter what. The good thing that has happened is we wanted to focus on policies this entire time, not personalities. And even those people that came into our district to try to help, you know, she's such a firebrand for raising a lot of money and not in a good way, that there's a lot of time people are yelling about her lack of formal education or her family and all of the swirling stuff and this Beetlejuice thing that made national news. We never talked about that at all. We never talked about national politics. It was about what matters to our district. Now that she's gone, thank goodness, we have a much cleaner and clearer conversation about what we've always wanted to talk about. So we're doing that. But having said that, we're still running against someone that is beholden to, we're not taking any corporate PAC money. We're very proudly signing, we've signed a term limit pledge. Our opponent is on the dole with corporate PAC money. Most of the political and financial support he's getting is coming from the Koch brothers, this American for Progress, outside money coming into Colorado, and people do not like outsiders telling rural Coloradoans how to live their lives. So reproductive rights is a really important issue to me and to our district and to the state of Colorado. There is an amendment this November that is going to codify women's health care freedom. And someone who is the son of an OBGYN and a son of someone who worked for Planned Parenthood and the brother of a current OBGYN, my youngest of three sisters, is something that's really important. You know, we do not want government-mandated pregnancies, and we do not want government-mandated family planning. And our opponent, they talk about states' rights, but here's my view, is that I don't think, well, first of all, if men can get pregnant, this abortion conversation would have never started like 100 years ago. So that's point one. Point two is nowhere along the 9 months of pregnancy is a woman going to make a worse decision than state politicians or federal politicians. So while I appreciate more and more people are trying to get states' rights issues, I just don't see state politicians making a better decision than the women. And whether it's a state politician invading the bedroom or a federal politician invading the bedroom, I don't think it matters. Women just need to be left alone to make their own decisions. So we're making, and my opponent doesn't believe in that, so we're making a big push on that. That's really the only, what I would say, even though it's a national issue, obviously affects everyone and every family, mm-hmm. male and female, no matter what. But the rest of our issues are really about the rural aspects of healthcare, the rural cost of living, rural attainable and workforce housing, and obviously the important conversation about protecting the water in southern and western Colorado.
Yeah, which, trust me, you are preaching to the choir with the repro issue. But in terms of, you know, the rural issue, you know, we always have questions because, look, we're coastal elite bitches. Like, what can I say? We are who we are. But regardless of that, you know, what are some of the solutions that can be implemented in rural communities that can really help them? You know, what is it? Yeah. Is it a, you know, amped up farm bill? Is it, you know, something else? What does that look like?
Yeah, thanks. So, I mean, you know, people understand, so I grew up, I was born on an Indian reservation in northeastern Montana, where Montana, North Dakota, Montana come together. I then grew up in Minneapolis. I went to school in Colorado. I went out on a whim to New York City to help a buddy chase a girl and ended up waiting tables as I did in high school and college, but I fell into finance. And after a lot of 9/11 funerals, I left. And then I've been living in the western slope of Colorado for 20 years. So I've had a chance to live literally in some of the most rural, poorest counties in the entire country. And I've had a chance to live, you know, in Manhattan metropolis. And so with all the respect, I'd like to visit New York, but I'm much happier living in Western Colorado, driving around. Two themes that I just want to kind of talk about. One is, I think there's this rural urban divide people talk about. To me, it's a little bit, with respect, there's a lot of people that are involved in the consumer side of things, and there's a lot of people that are involved in the producer side of things. And on the producer side in Western and Southern Colorado, we have people producing steel in Pueblo, Colorado, and they're producing this 150-year-old steel mill. They're making a lot of the rail lines for all the railroad tracks around the country, but it's also 80% solar powered. It's the only solar powered steel mill in the entire country. And 3 miles away from the solar powered steel mill is the world's largest manufacturer of wind turbine towers. So Southern Colorado is doing this great industrial manufacturing, but also doing kind of 21st century products. We have ranchers and farmers that are producing the food that shows up on the table, and we have domestic energy producers, which are good. So we all know, those that are producing, that you need a consumer. And most of our districts, counties are producers, And then Denver area is kind of on the consumer side. And not always does the consumer understand what it takes to produce something. The light switch goes on and everyone has the electricity. You go to aisle six and there's your beef. You end up turning on the water tap and there's water. And so I'm really trying to focus just letting people understand across more dense and urban areas how hard it is to be a producer and to make sure that there's some respect shown, just like we need to do a better job in rural parts respecting those that are being part of that in the metro areas, because they obviously are economically viable and economically important as well. So there's that. Let me see if I can, just some interesting facts. There's about 3,100 companies. 2,000 of them are deemed rural by the Department of Agriculture. So 2,000 of the 3,000 counties are defined as rural based on density. Well, in 1996, Bill Clinton, who was a Democrat, he actually won 50% of the rural counties in the country. So in 1996, rural America was basically, and when he looked at the urban area, a lot more moderate Republican governors and mayors. And now you go ahead 30 years, Joe Biden won fewer than 10% of the rural counties in the country. So basically, rural sent one party, 10% the other. And it's pretty clear that the urban areas are almost a monopoly of one party. And going back to, I don't like monopolies in either and anywhere. And that's kind of the framework that maybe you guys or your vote, it's something that I think is important. So I just want to try to highlight that there's a rare opportunity to try to kind of diversify the political thought, I guess, in rural America. But again, I don't spend a lot of time talking about, both parties have good issues to run on. No party has a monopoly on good ideas. And both parties have some really horrible ideas. And so I'm looking to try to figure out what's good for Colorado's, Western and Southern Colorado, and not really focused on, did it come from, I'm only going to talk to a Democrat. I'm not going to talk to Republicans. That's not how I am. And to your point before, 95% of the people in Western and Southern Colorado are not running around with red hats and blue hats.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm focused on.
Totally. I love that. And I think that's so needed. And especially like as you go through across the country and you go into rural communities, like there does need to be representation there, a different representation there showing that like there are different ways to think about things. There's solutions that can help you.
Yeah.
So having like real people come in and like have those conversations is so key. And I'm loving that you're doing that and focusing on that. And I'm also curious if there is something like on a human level that also helps you connect with those voters, like whether it's personality trait. I also love that you have your son with you. Like, what are those things that like just on a human level and like as a person who also like is from the area, how do you connect with voters?
Yeah, listen, people vote kind of looking for a value option. Not so much. Most people don't show up with a checklist of 10 or 15 policy issues and they figure out who has more policies. People are not robots, right? And I think that's something that a lot of people in this political industrial complex forget about. A couple things. As you can tell, I can be a rambly, but I'm authentic and sincere. And especially in rural parts of the country, they want to see authenticity and sincerity and showing. And we show up in areas that people have never seen a candidate running for office. And, as someone who shows up, not who's running as a Democrat, I'm showing up in towns and counties that are literally 90% Republican. And I'm there to talk about the issues because the people in that county have the same rural healthcare, mental health crisis as the people in some of our liberal areas. And I just think I don't take anyone's vote for granted and we show up everywhere. And I think that's something that's important too. Obviously, having the ability to do a 50, 60,000 mile father-son road trip is something that is pretty unique and pretty special. I'm not sure anyone running for Congress has spent that much father-son or father-daughter or mother-daughter or mother-son time. And I think that's interesting. And we're just on the road all the time. And it's just awesome that I have a very politically interested and astute. I mean, Felix basically was our field director in 2022 because we were kind of on a bootstrap budget. And that, for those that don't know what a field director is, you should consider yourself lucky. basically is trying to figure out how to earn the votes of the people, right? And that's where the get out the vote stuff with. He actually went online and found 130 college and high school kids across the country to help us out. And he interviewed and managed 130 college kids at age 16. This is really a family endeavor. And my wife, Katie, who's at home with our daughter, Quintessa, is a senior in high school. And as I joke, I think she understands I'm running for Congress. People that have 16 or 17 year old daughters might realize they don't see a lot of their parents, even if their parent is like living right in the same room as them. But she's been great too, doing some editing. She wants to get into journalism. So you guys are some inspiration for that. But I do believe showing up matters. I do believe being authentic and sincere matters. And people really want to see someone who truly believes what they say. And it's not easy. I'm called brave or dumb all the time because what I tell people, my answers to the most Republican communities in our district is the exact same answer I'm giving to some of our most liberal communities in our district when we're talking about almost any issue. And it's just who I am. I think people like to hear the straight conversation. And again, trying to talk like a normal human being is something that resonates. Because again, it's important. Just there aren't that many people that just love politics as a sport. They're trying to focus on their, again, their focus on their community. And that's really what they want to do. And they're looking for people that are going to understand them and make their lives a little bit better. They're not looking for miracles. They just want someone who understands them that's going to make their life and their community and their business a better opportunity for success. And it's not to be a gazillionaire. It's to continue to make sure that people can raise their kids where they live in a community where the kids want to have the ability to come back and work.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, sadly, kids are a lot of our exports. The biggest export we have are our children out of these rural communities. And we all want to stop that from happening.
Yeah, for sure. I'm trying to think too of like, if I were to spend that much time with my father, the stories,
yeah,
the conversations, yeah. I can only imagine. Do you have any funny stories of like being on the road, just father, son, bickering, yeah, no, it's or great. Just I mean, memories?
50,000 miles in a red pickup truck, pulling a trailer. You know, we took our old family camper trailer. Last time we turned it into a beepobart buggy. It's like a 19-foot camper trailer. And after we chased her out, we kind of just turned it back into a buggy as we drive around. It's kind of our moving billboard as we drive around though so much. So one of the interesting things was, going back last cycle, we kind of had this beepobart buggy, and it was a billboard basically driving around, and we started to get some thumbs up, and I'm like, hey, Felix, keep track, kind of scorecard, how many times we get, you know, people that are supporting us and not. And at the end of the day, Maddie, we had like 465 thumbs up and about 475 middle fingers, right? And so then, right then and there, outside of, you know, spending all this money on fancy polling, I knew we were going to have a close race because my poll driving around the district was 465 to 475.
The realest poll you could get.
Authentic polls is what you need to do. No, every once in a while we get lost. I mean, you know, we try to, you know, the problem is we don't have a lot of cell service out here. And so, you know, I know there's arguments in big cities about, well, we should get 5G or 10G. We're all looking for 1G cell service out here in Western and Southern Colorado. And so we try to figure out every once in a while we get lost, but we listen to a lot of podcasts. And so we'll make sure we add you guys to that list, whatever. But it's a blessing to have, without a doubt. People do appreciate it. And, you know, he's a great kid. He's a very astute young man now at age 18, and people appreciate that. And it's just, I think I'm not sure who's kind of crazier, like he or me, for wanting to do that, but we're excited to, you know, knock on wood, we end up going to Congress and he'll come with us for a year. But nobody knows from DC, no one's going to know the district better or me better in DC than Felix. And then he'll do the work through the end of next summer. Then he'll go off to school, as much as he might be tempted to kind of just stick around there about it.
But
it's really been great. And I think part of it's been, you know, the other thing is, last cycle, I put on like 20 pounds. You know, I did the Beat Bobart barbecue tour and a Beat Bobart bakery tour and a Beat Bobart brewery tour. And if you don't know CD3, you can't go on a Kale Salad tour in Western and Southern Colorado. So, you know, some days that we were eating, like we stopped at barbecue joints at 10, 12, 2, 4, 6, and 8. That was probably one of the most caloric days that's ever been done on a wheel. So It does. It's just been a great life experience. And we're doing the right thing for the right reasons in the right way. And there's big value in that.
For sure. Oh, my God. Let me say, I can't tell my dad about this because my dad's going to be like, we're running for office. And
if you guys want to come on out, we'd be happy to. I'm sure Felix would love to meet the two of you. So if you guys want to come on out and hop in the campaign trail, we'd go along, or you can bring your fathers or your mothers and we'll go. But it's certainly love been it. Great. And it certainly humanizes the conversation. Just mentally, being on the road and away from home and away from my wife, Katie, we've been married 21 years and she's been very helpful in the campaign as well. But it certainly helps from a mental standpoint to just have, you know, your best friend with you. And that part of it's been great.
Yeah, love it.
For sure. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Before, you know, we go, always closing notes, where can people find you? Where can they support the campaign? What are all the places to, you know, plug? Website, social media? Give us the take.
Yeah. Well, we're on every single media channel and social media channel that I can think of that I don't know all of them, but you guys probably do. But it's basically Adam for Colorado, ADAMFOR, Colorado. Our website is adamforcolorado.com. And, you know, there is a donate button. There's also a volunteer button. And there are ways for people to volunteer that don't live in our district, in our state. So please go in there and check that if you want. We're really proud, again, not to take any corporate PAC money, unlike our opponent. And our average donation is like literally $26 or $27. So that part of it's really great news. But from following us in social media and kind of just the tales from the road, all that stuff, we're trying to put up snippets up there. Again, anything to do with Adam for Colorado is our handles and our website. And we really appreciate what you two fine ladies are doing. It's just really important to, you know, be involved in different aspects of journalism. It's really, really hard out there. There's just so much yelling and screaming out there. So the chance that you provide a venue for people to have more than a 20-second quip and actually get into some conversations about policies, that's just kind of what's going on out here, you know, and we just want to share stories and be authentic and sincere. So thank you for making the time and what you ladies do.
Yeah, thank you for what you do, and good luck with everything. Go get them. We're excited to watch.
Thank you very much. That's great.
Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.